Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is your good friend, the very esteemed and well-travelled Clarence Copernicus Cloverleaf, welcoming you to another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon. You can always feel free to call in at 602-753-1883 to ask a question to the host or any of his well-established guests. Just please remember when calling in to be on your best behavior. This is a G-rated show, you know. Hey, that was a wicked rhyme! Anywho, just be sure to be kind and courteous. Now, on to the main event!
Alrighty, we're back for another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio. I'm the host of Most, Jimmy Falcon. Somehow, some reason, still feeling the lower end effects of this weed thing that's been going around with all the pollen. It's really messed a lot of people up, even all as far away as New Hampshire, as our last guest was. But today, we're coming a little closer than New Hampshire to someone I haven't known too long, but I've known from his firsthand experience, with him, that he is, has a very big heart. And viewing his acting reels, you can tell this man really has a future. Jose Santiago Jr.
What's going on, Ian? How you doing, bud?
I'm good. How are you, brother?
Oh, man, I'm good, man. Just enjoying life, man. Taking a break right now.
I
want
to talk to you more because... Yeah, I can hear you.
Let me see.
It's hard.
Hang on one second.
So,
I want to make sure you can hear me. All right. Let's see. How about now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, right on, man. So how you been?
I've been pretty good. I was saying I need to talk with you more because you have such a great outlook on things. And, of course, they can't always be great, but I have a hard time, even when things are great, not thinking about the bad things. So I guess starting there, how do you keep such a good outlook going through life? Because life is hard, and it can be unforgiving at times.
Yeah, you know, like I can tell everybody, life's going to knock you down, man. That's its whole goal. Life is to knock somebody down to see if that person's going to fight to get back up. And I get up every day, you know, and I thank God that I'm up, because there's people out there who cannot get out of bed every day. People who are mentally disabled, physically disabled, or just sick with some kind of disease, and they're bedridden. I mean, so for me to be able to get up every day out of bed, it's a blessing in itself. You know, it starts my day like, okay, let me just start my day, because I think of others before I think of myself and what they're going through. They might not have it as good as you and I, getting up every day and just going to work and doing what we do and hustling and grinding all the time. They might have to be waited on hand and foot, or, you know, they might not be able to do anything for themselves at all. So why would we not get up in a good mood every day that we can get out of our own beds?
That's a great point. I've always heard people say that, but to think about it, really, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that can't get out of bed by themselves. I never thought of it like that. I always thought of it, just get up, you know, because you're happy to be alive, which is very grateful. But you do make a great point saying that there's people that can't even lift themselves out of bed, and thankfully we're still able to do that.
Right, exactly.
And cooking also has been a big part of your life. And I think besides my first job, everybody wants to be like a cop or an EMT. I wanted to be a chef after I wanted to be a cop. So many years I wanted to do that before, you know, life went a different way for me. How did you get first interested in going to school and making this a career?
I always loved to cook with my grandmother when she was alive, and my mom, and, you know, family gatherings. I was always there watching and cutting and helping and asking questions. So I was always interested. You know, it was one of those things where I got to a certain age, and I started manning the barbecue for the parties at my family's houses, and next thing you know, they're like, "Oh, what'd you put in it? Oh my God, that was great!" Oh, so you know, I'm thinking if I can hit the hardest critics with, you know, all, I might as well go ahead and try to hit the world with it, you know. And so I went to school and got my degree and trained under some of the master French chefs, Jacques Pepin, Jacques Torres, and you know, we out in New York, and it just took off from there, man. And my career just skyrocketed when I left New York, and I just made up. I can't even count the numbers of people I fed throughout the 14 year of my career.
Yeah, that's really amazing. I never really got as far as, like, I mean, living in the country, we had a burning barrel, and I had like sticks and and you know, growing up, that was being in the middle of nowhere. You got to find something to keep your mind
right.
Needs. But I never really, after I started working in restaurants, I was like, I don't know if I want to go to school for this.
It's it is a very demanding occupation, very demanding career. You will have no time at home with your family. You will not spend time with your kids. You will not spend time with your wife or your husband or whatever significant other. You're married to that kitchen, and that kitchen owns you for 12 to 15 hours a day, you know, and sometimes 6-7 days a week. Then the day you are off, the last thing you want to do is be cooking, or the last thing you want to do is be on your feet when you're on your feet all week for 60, 70 hours.
Yeah, that's especially being an executive chef and not just, you know, some guy working at the Burger King or even working in some kind of hotel.
Yeah, no,
somewhere.
When I was the executive, I had to run 4 different steakhouses. So I was at every – I made it a point to stop at every steakhouse every day. So I was always in the car going back and forth, and then where, you know, it's dinner service or lunch service. I'm there all day until the sun's on, and I go to the next one. It was just – it was very demanding. 14 years of my kids' lives, you know, I missed. You know, the relationship we had wasn't too good because Daddy was there, but he was not there, you know. And I miss out on all the birthdays and the Christmases and the New Year's because I was always in the kitchen because people always go out to eat for Christmas. People always go out to eat for New Year's. So I didn't know what that was with my family, you know, with my kids when they were younger, when they really needed me around. But, you know, it was my job to provide for them and give them the best I could. And the only way I could do it was through the culinary world. And, you know, I don't take things for granted today anymore. You know, every day to me is a blessing because I'm going to always do something different. And I'm just going to put a smile on somebody's face. That's my goal. Just to go out there and put a smile on as many people's faces as I can. You never know what kind of day that person's having. That smile might've just changed their whole outlook on their day.
Yeah. I like hugs. Are so infectious, and it seems like the bigger, since I'm a pretty big guy, you come up to someone who's like 5'2", and they're like, "Oh, get away from me!" It's like a bear hug or something. I'm like, "Come on, I'm just big,
yeah.
But it's just a big hug. I'm not gonna hurt you." Like, I think
right,
there's more of that in the world. I mean, people, especially in big cities, especially.
There does. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
People go, I mean, if you're walking through Chicago, people will go on the other side of the street if they see a certain race or something. That, it just amazes me that stuff is still happening in 2019, because I grew up in a small town. And you just know to love everyone because they're nice people. I mean, anyone, any color, any creed can be nice or mean. You can't label it with anything like that. It's,
I mean, we're all of one race. I mean, no one ever gets it, but we are all of one race. We're all the human race. Well, you're not a dog or a cat or a whale or a rhino. You're a human, and that person's
right.
Human. So why are we justifying and trying to, you know, and justify color, creed, ethnicity, religion? I mean, just it's a person. It's a human being. I'm a human being. They're a human being. It doesn't matter where they're from or where I'm from. We're human beings.
Right.
I can guarantee you, if the world came to an end and two different nationalities were on an island, stranded. In order to survive, they had to work together. I guarantee you they would start a civilization, because it's just the way it goes. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? Go out there and on the island and kill the other person? Now you're all alone the rest of your life. You can't get to anybody. You have no one to talk to. At least now you have someone there who's helping you build or farm or fish or whatever. You know, and it's not someone of the same color or race or ethnicity, but it's a human being. They're human beings. We're all human beings. People just want a title. I'm this. I'm that. Well, you know, you're human. That's what you are.
Yeah.
You know, and I call things the way I say it. You know, I call them like I see it, man.
And that's good. I wish I had more of that. But I see that, and of course this happened throughout history. I mean, African Americans got it horribly during the Civil War and even going up to the Jim Crow years. And now, Mexicans, I mean, are having the same issues with trying to come in America. And if you see someone who is Muslim, a lot of people generally think terrorists, or it doesn't even matter what country they're from. That's labeled automatically, and it's really unfortunate because I've met some cool people who could be pink or green, like you mentioned, and that'd be cool because that'd be the only green person I knew. Like, dude, you're awesome.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. You know, I love everybody the same, man. I mean, I don't have no hatred or ill will to any color, race, or creed or nationality. I mean, that person puts their clothes on the same way I do every day. That person bleeds the same color I bleed. I mean, they're human. You know, they're just human.
And now that you're working hard, you know, becoming this actor, you still have time and you have your own construction business, which is awesome, even giving back even more building dreams and homes for people. How did that whole venture start?
Well, while I was a chef, I always dabbled in building stuff and creating, you know, and fixing and repairing, remodeling. So, I mean, it was just when I got to the point of acting, acting was such a demanding career that it's kind of hard to have a 9-to-5 and trying to be an actor because, I mean, how many times can you tell your boss you got to leave work for an audition 3 or 4 times a week? And I don't think you're going to have a job. You know, after the third or fourth time, you know, you might just be canceled. So, for me, it was a no brainer, man. I walked away. I walked out of the steel mill. You know, I was making $120,000 a year. You know, had a nice job, but I lived there 7 days a week, 12-hour days. Did I want to do that the rest of my life? No, acting was my love, and I wanted to act. So I said, you know what? I quit. And I sat back for a year and figured out everything, and then the following year opened up my construction business. Now I'm my own boss. I own the company. I got to leave to L.A. for an audition. I'm on the first flight out. I got to be back in Chicago to film. I'm on the first flight back in scheduled. You know, it's the freedom that I created for myself, owning my own business, to be able to do my acting full time. Well, you have these actors out there who are Facebook actors or Instagram actors. That's all. That's all. Yeah, there's a lot of them out there. That's what they do for a living. They show up on a set maybe once or twice a year, or independent film sets every other week. They're somewhere. Those are Facebook actors. Those are Instagram actors. I'm an actual SAG-AFTRA actor. I'm a Screen Actors Guild actor. And I've been to L.A. I've seen what some of them who have been out there for years trying to make it are doing, and they're struggling. And they're not looking like the healthiest people out there, you know. So I said, you know what, I'm not gonna be a starving actor. I'm gonna be a working actor. And when I say working, I don't mean working on sets every day. I mean, that's going to come with the auditions and the bookings. That'll come then. But until I get the auditions, until I get the bookings, I'm not going to sit around and wait for my phone to ring from my agent to try to get some work and try to pay some bills. I created my own company to pay all the bills I want to pay, to put money away, to fly, come and go as I please, take vacations when I want. That's the freedom that I created for myself. No one gave it to me. No one twisted my arm to do it. I did it because I knew this was my outlet to being able to be free to do my acting full-time, my career as actor full-time, and still pay all my bills and take care of my property.
Yeah, something, of course, starting out when I first went to college for radio, I'm like, I want to be famous. I want to be interviewing big celebrities, and I want to be in Hollywood. And it seems like the more you get closer to realizing stuff like this, you realize it's not that great.
Right. Yeah, I mean, everybody says, "Oh, I'm gonna leave Chicago. I'm gonna leave Indiana. I'm going to Hollywood. I'm gonna be a star." And then you don't hear from that person for a couple years, you know. And you're watching that person, but you don't see them doing anything. And it's like, okay, so what's going on? What's going on out there? Well, when I was out there, I've been on multiple auditions when I was out there. There's about 150,000 guys just like me out there. So, I mean, the stakes are a lot higher in Los Angeles than they are in Chicago. And Chicago, you know, Chicago has been a good city to work in. You know, I have to always correct people. I'm not from Chicago. So I'm not the actor out of Chicago. I'm an actor that works out of Chicago, works out of L.A., works out of New York, wherever I can. But I'm not an actor from Chicago. When I go to L.A., I mean, I'm up against some of the top Latinos in the business. So I have to bring my A game. You know, I might get the part, I might not. But then you live to fight and audition another day. If you let that sit there and he beats you down, you know, Mark Ruffalo, like he said in his interview, the Incredible Hulk, the guy came out of nowhere. 500 no's. He had 500, he encountered every audition that he got no, 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 no. And that one yes put him as the Incredible Hulk. That one yes.
Wow.
So, I mean, the guy went through over 500 auditions. And if you're living in New York and L.A., you can audition three or four times a week. Imagine that. Three or four times a week in 52 weeks. How many years did that guy go without?
And you might not even get the part.
Right, right. But they're seeing you. They're hearing you. You got to make your – I always tell everybody, do something at the beginning of your audition or at the end of your audition to make you stand out. That's what the director's going to remember. The director's not going to remember the same people over and over. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know how many thank yous they hear that day? You know, it's like Jimmy Fallon writing his thank you cards. You know, thank you. You know, Jimmy Fallon, I love that guy. But, you know, that's how many they hear a day. They hear hundreds of them a day. Do something different to stand out. So they say, who was that guy who did that? Or who was that girl who did that? That's how you stand out. That's how you get the audition. That's how you book the gig.
Wow. Yeah, it's great, I'm sure, to go on auditions, but I think, like you mentioned, if you're doing it 4 days a week, if you didn't stay for even a month, you didn't get anything, it has to be really trying to go, well, I'm going to go for another audition.
Right. You got to keep fighting, man. In this business, you got to keep fighting. Because no one's going to give anything to you, so you got to go out there and take it from the. So you got to take it from everybody in that room, and all the people out in the waiting room, the competitors. You got to go in there and take what you believe is yours, and if you believe you deserve it, you'll get it. If you have any doubt, like they're going to hire this person, they're going to hire that person, then don't even go to the audition room because you're not going to be on your A game. You're not going to be at 100%. You know, I sit there and I see everybody walking around back and forth, pacing, talking to themselves, memorizing their lines. And I sit there and I just look. I've never once gotten up and started rehearsing my lines to remember them because I already know them. I memorize them all night and all morning drive to the audition. I know them. I know them like a good movie. So I don't do that. But, you know, you try to talk to somebody and they're like, oh, I'm rehearsing. Well, go ahead and knock yourself out. That person is nervous right there. That is a nervous person, and that person is going to go into that audition and bomb it, guaranteed. I was that person when I started 8 years ago. Now, I look at the script, I memorize it, and I put it away. I don't look at it again until after the audition's over to see if I mess up anything. If I did, oh well, I made it my own.
Yeah, man. I was going to make a point there, but hopefully I will remember and come back to it. I did want to bring up Joanna because
yes.
I was reading this synopsis for it, and it looks like it's going to be stellar. Anything with, spirits, and a spirit in
yep.
anything. If a spirit, you know, think of Ghostbusters and Stay Puft. A spirit in anything
yes.
can be scary. So, of course,
it's going to be really good.
Mexico.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. A buddy of mine who created, who wrote it and created Emilio, he's out in L.A., Emilio Acaraz. The dude's amazing. He's a great writer. He's an amazing partner because he's not only my friend or my brother, he's a partner. And I met him through a mutual friend. And the guy loved me so much. He's like, hey, dude, do you want to be a part of this? He goes, I want to put you in this movie. I said, yeah, no problem. So I was an actor on the movie before I decided to jump in as an executive producer, because he's got a list of people involved, and all we were waiting for is for them to send back the letters of intent signed that they're going to be on this movie, and this thing's going to be a great movie. So I jumped right on it and tried to become an executive producer. He had no problem giving me executive producer credit at all. He's like, come on, I need somebody to roll with me. He goes, and I want me and you. Nobody believed in us. Nobody thought we could do it. Now we're coming to the finish line. We're getting ready to send contracts out. He goes, I need you as an executive producer on this. You know, I said, okay, so I'm in. The story is really good, man. It's about this gal. This little girl has a grandmother. Her grandmother's kind of mean, you know, because she's like very protective over this little girl. And this little girl gets bullied. It's about bullying, you know. It's gonna show a side of bullying. And what happens to bullies when somebody like the grandmother can actually make things happen without touching anybody? It's called witchcraft. We all know what it is. It's in Spanish, it's called brujería. So, you know, to see all this come together, the grandma passes, her spirit goes into the dow. And it's from there, it's just a bloodbath. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard about, like, Robert the Doll and, you know, different, you know, haunted dolls that have, you know, made life for all these new films. It's interesting to think that a spirit could inhabit a doll, you know, a pillow, anything, really, even something childish, and still
right.
wreak havoc.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, and that's the base of the story. So this girl is all grown up now, but she still has a doll. You know what I mean? What'd your mom
mm-hmm.
say?
Yep.
Okay. Bye, baby. All right, yeah, so, I mean, that's what the doll's going to be. The doll's going to be all about that. You know, the movie is just going to be really good. So this girl grows up, and she is now, I think she's a teenager. I want to say she's a teenager in her 20s. And then everybody starts, people who are just, how could you say, without giving it away, people who are doing her wrong get done wrong. Simple as that. Because she still has this doll all these years later.
Yikes. So when do you guys, I know, you know, stuff's kind of working on this now, you don't want to give out too much about it, but when are you guys looking for, like, a release date or, you know, anything?
We are actually going to start filming. Yeah, we're actually going to start filming at the end of this month or beginning of October. And then after that, it should be released right around January or February.
Very cool. Well, of course, I made sure I got the okay from Brian Ward to be able to break the news that you're going to be at Dark History Con this year with us again, October 26th, 27th, at the City Center in Champaign, Illinois.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Awesome.
I am coming back down again. Man. I had a great time last time with you guys. I will be there again.
And I did want to say that, but as far as, you know, what the future holds for you besides the Dark History Con, and of course, I'm still active in construction and everything that you do and still keep your sanity. What does the future hold for you?
I'm going to end up – the goal is to give the company to my son because he's been busting his butt learning with me. The goal is to turn it over to him, let him start making good money for himself and his family, and just continue my acting and my executive producing now, once this movie gets off the ground, this is going to make enough money to budget maybe another 7 or 8 films back to back. We've got so much writing and so many projects that we can bring after this Joanna hits that the people are going to get tired of seeing me and Emilio on TV.
Well, that is awesome. I think that, you know, when you guys get Joanna filmed and get it released, I think it's going to be great. I definitely want to see it because I don't watch enough horror films. I try to stick to comedy because I love to laugh.
Right. Comedy's good. Makes you laugh. But, no, it's going to be really good, man. And like I said, once we get it done, I want to have a sit-down interview with you guys, man, me, you, and Emilio over the phone from L.A., and we're gonna plug, man. We're gonna ask you to help us plug it when we get ready to bring this release out. It's gonna be in theaters. We are gonna probably do a screening here in Indiana, closer to my hometown of Valparaiso, because this is where most of my supporters are at. And then LA as well, you know, probably the Chinese Theater or, you know, on Sunset Boulevard in LA, so.
See, that's what I was wanting to bring up. Valparaiso, Indiana.
Yep.
And because
that's where I'm at.
Because of someone whose life work was dedication, and because he had a great motto, I really adore Orville Redenbacher. And of course, Valparaiso, he lived there for so long, he's got the bronze statue. So I had to bring up.
Popcorn, I got the Popcorn Fest coming this weekend.
Oh, of course, the legendary Valparaiso Popcorn Festival. That's been going on for a long time.
Oh, a long time, man. It just gets bigger and bigger and better every year. So we're going to be down there enjoying it and celebrating with everybody. It's just a great time, man. You know, I have a lot of fans here in Valparaiso. And I'm very honored and humbled to meet people. People welcome me with open arms, and they respect my privacy. And I got really great neighbors, man. I couldn't ask for anything more. I got 4 or 5 of the best neighbors any person could ever ask for.
Yeah, I've always wanted to come up there, and you know, if I do, we can get lunch or something. I'll run after you. Like,
yeah, next time you're in town.
Hey, Jimmy Falcon, Cloverleaf Radio. Can we get a second, Mr. Hello? Are you talking to me?
No. Next time you're in town, man, get up here, give me a holler, and we'll get together, man. I'll be over at the ranch. We'll have a good time.
Sounds good, brother. Well, best of luck with Joanna, and I can't wait to see you, man, coming up. Whoa, it's a little over a month from now. I can't believe it.
A little bit over a month.
So
about a month and a couple weeks. A month and 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. Yeah. So we will be sitting down again
soon,
brother.
Sir.
All right. Ian, thank you so much, man. Love the radio show. You guys keep doing what you're doing, and I'm proud of you, brother. I'll see you soon.
Hey, you too, bro. Keep struggling. Keep, you know, going against the struggle and keep making people smile and keep building them houses.
Always, man, always. Thank you so much for your time, man. You guys take care and God bless.
All right. God bless you, brother. Take care.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty, guys. Big thanks again to Jose Santiago Jr. You guys, there goes the 90 seconds. If you guys just joined us late or something, you can always go back and check out the archive. It should be up in about 10 minutes from now. I had a couple quiet days, thankfully. I had some great shows, many in a row, of course, leading up with conventions and stuff. That seems to happen more and more. But I had some great ones. I don't know if you missed any of the recent ones. Weird Paul, of course, YouTube sensation. We had on David Thibodeau from one of the survivors of the 1993 Waco siege at Mount Carmel with David Koresh's Branch Davidians. We had on the Queen of the Paranormal, Catarosha Ono Carroll. She's going to be at SoCon this weekend. A few days ago, I interviewed Brianna Dinsky from DreamWorks Wonder Parks. That was a great show. If you guys missed any of those and any of the others that we've recently done, you can always check that out as well. For more information on everything coming up and for new shows and biographies on Josh, Ariana, and I, you can check out JIANetwork.com. And, of course, you can listen to us on about 15 different
networks, but Radio Public and Anchor are the big ones. And, of course, we're going to be letting people know in the future how you guys can support us on our journey to help make this a better show, help make it a great network. Everybody, people helping people. It's one of my favorite quotes. People have quotes. I hate when you do that. That's one of my favorite quotes. People helping people. So we'd love to have you on this journey with us. And thank you, as always, for listening. We will be at SoCon this weekend, 2019. SoCon, September 6th and 7th, Cross County Mall, Mattoon, Illinois. It's absolutely a free event. And we are going to be back, actually, tomorrow with the last show before SoCon, author and owner of Rising Tide Publishing, my dear friend Brian K. Morris, returning. And September 9th, we're back with filmmaker, makeup artist, and actress Athena Tejadko. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. Big thanks again to Jose Santiago Jr. Have a great night.